fighting for America.
The hands up thing is not something new. In the black community, it's totally different. We hear about this crap all the time. We know not to interact with the cops. We know not to say too much, do too much.
Fighting for Idaho.
I miss him so much. He's just so funny. Whenever you were down, he just made you laugh. I just miss him.
Fighting for you.
The situation this past 2 years has been extremely difficult. It's taught us a lot about patience and trusting God. And we're just beginning to realize the amazing hidden blessings that God has brought through this crisis.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Good morning. Thank you for listening. Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. Hope you're having a great week. Maybe you're doing some shopping. Maybe you're working. If so, we appreciate you contributing to the wheels of the economy. Joining us now is our great friend, Philip Hardy.
Good morning, Kevin.
Phil Hardy, political activist, man of the world, Strategies 360. Good to have you with us again, Phil.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much, Kevin.
Well, we have had an incredible year in politics, and let's take a look politically, statewide. What was the big story for you?
The big story for me was the fact that despite all of the rancor within the Republican Party, the divisiveness, the presentation of what we thought were credible Democrat candidates to challenge a divided Republican Party, and ultimately there was no change. The status quo is the same, despite what everyone thought was a chance of major change. It just goes to show that Idaho is a very big state, geographically diverse, and it is extremely difficult for newcomers to make an impact.
Apparently, when we're talking about Idaho, the second most conservative state in the country recently, but how conservative are we really when it comes to our elected officials? Republican, yes. Conservative?
I think that they are. We are obviously a conservative state that tends to, you know, obviously vote Republican. But what I also think we are is a state with a varying rural, suburban, and urban elements. And for a candidate to win statewide office in Idaho, it requires a lot of experience. And by experience, I mean the voters have to have experience of you. It's not just enough to run strong in key urban areas. We learned that with Senator Fulcher's challenge on the governor. Senator Fulcher won most of the key urban larger counties, but it still wasn't enough. The rural element of Idaho is still such a massive force that it takes years and years of effort for the voters in those areas to learn who you are. And that is an advantage that gentlemen such as Governor Rotter and now Lieutenant Governor Little are building to their great advantage.
What about the people that didn't run, the bell of the ball when it comes to the state conservative movement, your old boss, Congressman Labrador? Do you think that he or his advisors believe that he missed out on a bruising primary with Governor Rotter?
I think there are many people and who believe that that Representative Labrador would have defeated the governor. But, you know, coulda, woulda, shoulda, hindsight is 20/20. You know, Representative Labrador, while better known probably in eastern Idaho than Senator Fulcher, doesn't travel to eastern Idaho because that's not his district. So there are just as many voters there who are as unfamiliar with him as with any other challenger. So I think that Congressman Labrador, I'm not one of those people that thinks that Congressman Labrador is ultimately going to run for governor or run for governor in the short term. There has been so much turnover in the U.S. House of Representatives that his seniority is going up. He probably could be in line for a very key subcommittee post in the next 6 or 8 years, in which he'll still
That's a long time.
He'll still be under 60. You know, the man isn't even 50 years of age yet. So he has plenty of time to wait.
Right, but Congressman Labrador always loves being here in Idaho, and do you see there's going to be any turnover in House leadership considering his rather chilly relationship with Speaker Boehner?
That is really one of the more fascinating things that is popping up. You're already seeing the articles where the so-called Hell No Caucus, which I actually believe Representative Labrador coined that term in Congress, who are, you know, aiming for a government shutdown. They don't want to, you know, make life easy for President Obama, especially considering the fact that, you know, within days of the election, President Obama rolled out his immigration semi-amnesty, that there could be a problem there with Speaker Boehner's speakership. I just don't see it. You know, I think that there's going to be some disquiet, but I think all those folks learned their lesson that there just isn't the votes to take down the speaker.
Well, that's what I'm saying here at 580KIDO. You expect him to be a good Congressman Labrador, to get along with leadership then?
I didn't say that. I think that he's going to have his disagreements and continue to have his disagreements. And that caucus that he is a member of, and some would say a leader of, is growing. The more moderate...
Well, it didn't grow during the election, did it?
I think
they did. They were all smacked down.
Well, certain ones, especially in the Senate, the Tea Party candidates were smacked down. But, you know, the number of congressmen who have been elected since Representative Labrador was elected in 2010 is just, I think it's more than half. You know, that's just an unprecedented number of new, relatively new congressmen in the U.S. House of Representatives. And I think that he probably sees his future there in the short term.
Well, what does it mean for those folks that have an issue with the governor? By the way, Phil Hardy with us, Strategies 360, Kevin Miller in the morning on 580KIDO. What does it mean for those folks in the grassroots movement that have become fixtures on this program, that have spawned their own publications, that have worked tirelessly to bring more of a grassroots effort to Idaho? You had the perfect storm. Was this a defeat for them in the election?
Well, yeah, it has to be a defeat for them. And I think that what they my advice to them, not that my advice is meaningful.
Your unsolicited advice?
My unsolicited advice to these people is, you know, they have to start working together with the governor. They have to start working together with Lieutenant Governor Little, who is obviously the heir apparent at this point. There's, you know, articles are already appearing talking about him as governor in waiting. These people are in many ways conservative, or as conservative in certain respects as they are. I think that they just need to start working together and talking about how do they try to bring these issues to the forefront that they can't agree on.
Right, but on the other hand, let's speak about this with respect. You have a lot of folks that are upset because the establishment struck back in the primary and wiped out a lot of these folks. Senator Pierce, others are no longer in the legislature, and they go, how can we work together when it's the same administration that wiped out a lot of our, for lack of a better term, kinfolk?
Well, that battle went both ways. You know, the arch conservatives were, the ultras were trying to take out the moderates were trying to take out the ultra conservatives. And let's be clear, there were certain mainstream representatives who lost their seats in northern Idaho. The more, of course, these were conservative people, they just weren't conservative enough. So in that respect, the more conservative wing of the party did have some successes. So I think that this isn't played out, unfortunately, and I'm not sure when it will play itself out. But the reality is, when you're getting to that statewide position level, it is, you'd almost have to start running now if you wanted to have a reasonable choice chance in 4 years of winning office.
Well, how much does money kick into this? If money were the all-determining factor, Mr. Belukoff would have won. Yet it did play into the primary between Senator Fulcher and Governor Otter.
Well, I think that the money that we're talking about here is actually money that people don't really think about. The money is, do you have the time not to work in a job so that you can go out to Chalice and to some of these Mackey and some of these more remote areas, rural areas of Idaho, and make yourself known by going to the Rotary Clubs, the Lions Clubs, things of that nature on a regular basis? Do you have the flexibility in your life that you can become a permanent fixture on the circuit all around the state, getting your name and recognition out there so people get a chance to meet you? That costs money. Either it's lost opportunity in earnings, or it certainly costs you money to drive out there and spend the night and drive back. And that's really what the money that we're talking about is getting out to those areas and just pressing the flesh.
Our great friend Phil Hardy with us, Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO. We're kind of looking at the year in review, if you will. Were you surprised by anything else in the election, a few months ago?
Well, you know, I wasn't surprised here in Idaho, but when you take Idaho and you look at the entire country, it was a Republican wave year again. And I think that we have Harry Reid as much as the president to thank for that. You know, the obstructionist tactics that they used in the U.S. Senate for the last 2 years, really the last 4 years of doing nothing, has really hurt the Democrat brand. And that certainly didn't help the Idaho Democrats, because Harry Reid became a very easy face to hate, and frankly don't think he's a very nice man. And the president, who could not stop himself from saying things that hurt his party's credibility throughout the country, which led to crushing defeats, not just in Idaho, but everywhere. It wasn't a good time to run as a Democrat in Idaho. It wasn't a good time to run as a Democrat anywhere.
Sure, and that impacted, obviously, Mr. Blukoff, who, let's face it, without the influence of the national election, certainly had everything going for him. He had the money. He had the education issue. He had otter fatigue. He outspent the governor. Yet, do we attribute it all to everybody hates Obama?
To a certain extent, I do. I believe that. Frankly, I didn't think Mr. Blukoff was a very good candidate. If you watched any of the debates and you saw him perform in
public settings.
He's
no Harley Brown.
No, he's not a Harley Brown. And he wasn't a John Bujak either. So I don't think there was a lot of substance for people to grab onto. And even though he started his campaign, his television ads, so early, there was no time for people to get to know the man personally. He wasn't even that well known in Boise, where people who know him say, oh, everyone knew AJ. Well, no, we didn't. So I think that it's unfortunate. And really, the real shocking element is, for $4 million of his own dollars, he only outperformed the previous gubernatorial candidate, Keith Allred, by a few percentage points. I think that if Mr. Blukoff had set his sights on superintendent of public instruction, for example, or secretary of state, or one of these other races where a fraction of the amount of money is required to run an effective campaign, he may have won one of those seats. But instead, no, he went for the top dog. And, you know, I think it's proven now that Butch Otter is probably, you know, if not the greatest, you know, certainly one of the greatest elected officials in Idaho history. He's been in office for, you know, longer than most people, you know, have been alive. And I'm not sure of how many races he's ever lost, maybe one. Clearly, I think that, you know, Governor Otter, if he stays healthy and wanted to continue on, there's no reason he couldn't run for a fourth term.
I wonder what that would look like.
Well, I think it would be more of the same, which to some people, you know, who claim otter fatigue and don't think he's doing a good job, that's for them that what it would be like. But for a lot of other people, it would be stability. You know, the things don't change quickly in Idaho, and businesses enjoy that sort of predictability. Predictability in a state is prized. You don't want to bring your business or operate a business where 1 year it's this and 1 year it's that. It really is something that to be admired, actually.
More coming up with our friend Phil Hardy, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, Phil Hardy with us. It's been a while, Phil.
You know, it has, and I'm always happy when you invite me, and, you know, when I get that phone call saying, would you like to appear? I enjoy it. Visiting with you is very, it's one of the highlights of my day, and I do appreciate a good argument periodically.
Well, maybe we can get to that. So let's talk a little bit about what we can expect during the upcoming session. Are we going to see raising of the taxes, Medicaid expansion, anything good?
Well, you know, I think that Medicaid expansion is really what people want to know. Is it going to happen or is it not going to happen? And I've been talking with certain people that make Medicaid expansion, if you take the politics out of it, the number of people eligible by federal mandate for Medicaid is growing at such an alarming rate that if we do not expand Medicaid in Idaho, it will start to subsume our entire budget. I don't know how long we can go without expanding Medicare, and I think that's probably the discussion we're going to have if indeed it doesn't happen. People are going to say, you know, as much as we don't want this, we think we have to have this. And I do think it's possible that we may see Medicaid expansion in this session. And if we
do, how conservative is that?
Well, you know what? Fiscally, if you're looking at the ruination of your state by not adopting this federal mandate, the prudent fiscal course would be to save the state. Unfortunately, the federal government is pressuring states into this, and I don't see a realistic option, you know, ultimately for the state to stay out of it. And it would be unfortunate if that is what takes over the entire session, because there are other issues that people do want to talk about. There are other issues regarding education, transportation. Yes, raising taxes for the highway fund, you know, to fill the backlog of broken bridges and busted up roads, you know.
Do we really have those?
And this is the point.
Or is it propaganda just to line the pockets of the lobbyists?
You know, I think that in a lot of areas of Idaho, and of course, if you drive on I-84, there are portions of I-84 as you go toward eastern Idaho.
I see a lot of construction on I-84.
It's a long road, and it needs to be taken care of from
Star, Idaho to here, because that's what I'm concerned about.
Well, I understand that, but there are those elected leaders who have to take a broader view than that, Kevin.
Oh, the spoil system.
Well, it's not that. In
what have they been doing
areas,
with the money as opposed to why are they going to raise our taxes?
There hasn't been a raise in the gasoline tax in Idaho since 1996.
They haven't needed it. You know why? Because the people don't want it.
The
politicians listen to the people.
It's very difficult for people to want to raise taxes on themselves. But in order to have a modern infrastructure, sooner or later that's going to need to happen.
Right. But then who determines the level of that infrastructure, if you will?
Well, it needs to be first of all, the Idaho Transportation Department's done a great job with what little they have. But at some point, you're doing less with less rather than more with less. And I think that that's a conversation that needs to be had. But, you know, there's going to be a few other conversations, and one that I think is going to take people by surprise, and you're not going to want to talk about this at all, so I can't believe I'm even mentioning it.
Go ahead.
But, you know, there's going to be a great effort to do conservation in the terms of preserving habitat for the sage grouse. You know, this is an issue.
No, this is exciting.
I knew I shouldn't have brought it up. But, you know, I think there's going to be a few other issues that people are going to start waking up to the importance of in Idaho.
I think people are very worried about their pocketbooks, considering you've got the health exchange, considering possibly a Medicaid expansion. It's not like we're rolling in the money here, Phil.
No, we're not.
Maybe,
but the economy is doing better in Idaho.
Maybe you are, but most of us working folk aren't, Phil.
Well, we all have to make do with what we have.
Exactly.
Kevin. And
the government should be great stewards of that.
I think the government in Idaho has done a good job with this, but we can't kick the can down the road forever. And it's been something like what's now 6 years since the governor tried to raise funds for transportation. Roads haven't got better in those last 6 years. In a lot of places in rural Idaho, they've got worse. So it needs to be addressed, and I think it's going to be addressed in this legislative session. Easy for me to say.
Let's talk a little bit about at 580 KIDO with our friend Phil Hardy from Strategies 360. Some of the new folks coming in. Let's start with the, dare we call her, controversial state school superintendent-elect, Sherry Ibarra.
Yeah, a lot of people are watching, and unfortunately, I think a lot of people are watching and hoping that she's going to fail. You know, there's...
Now, why would that be? Considering she's inheriting the legacy of soon-to-be former state school superintendent Thomas Luna.
Well, because she won a very narrow election, and she won a narrow election with most people not really knowing who she is. Now, let's be honest. Most people didn't know who her opponent was either. But
Jana Jones, I knew
who she was. In this particular case, they want to focus more on Sherry Ibarra because she's a complete newcomer to politics. And
you're saying she's a victim.
I think that she has been the victim of a lot of media abuse, to be honest. You know, the media usually pick one person to beat up on during the election cycle.
What did the media make up about her? How did the media abuse her?
I think the media took certain liberties periodically that they probably wouldn't have done and
shouldn't
have done.
When she was going for her doctorate but wasn't?
you know, things along
Hold
the lines
on, no,
of her
no,
marriage
no.
and whatnot.
You're a smart guy. I mean, was that fair game?
I think there was some miscommunication probably on certain elements of this. But the thing that I find most interesting about Sherry Ybarra is I believe she ran for the right reasons. She wanted to make sure that she did what she could for education in Idaho. She was a passionate believer that if I step up, I can make a difference. And she's done that. So I think she
thank
deserves
you for
the opportunity
thank
to
you
do
for
that.
The infomercial about Sherry Ybarra.
You
but
asked me about Sherry Ybarra.
No, you made a statement, then you didn't back it up. You're going, well, you know, I think that she was a victim. Well, she
no, you said she was a victim, and I simply agreed with what you
she didn't
you threw
feel,
out
I
there.
Mean, look, if you're in education, shouldn't you know the difference between being getting your doctorate and getting a specialist thing? I don't know. I'm not a bright guy, so I'm saying, or if you were a teacher of the year or not.
Yes, I mean these are some.
Are those fair or unfair?
I think that there were a few comments that she probably she should have known better than to be parsing in words or making general statements.
It's difficult to be a candidate.
It is extremely difficult. Did that go in?
It's extremely difficult to be a candidate.
It's a very tough, and I think she has learned the hard way, the bright glare.
Will there be a learning curve?
I think that Tom Luna has said that there's a learning curve for everyone who gets into that office. It's a very big department. It's got a huge budget. There's a lot of people who work there. I'm sure, you know, I hate to use this phrase. It's probably the most often used phrase in Idaho. She's, you know, drinking from a fire hose at the moment. And I think that if she is lucky, she'll have good people around her and people who stay on, perhaps, who were in that department that we don't even know who they are that served in vital roles.
I don't know. I think it's fraught with peril, personally. More coming up with our friend Phil Hardy. It is Kevin Miller in the morning. We've covered the state school superintendent race. We'll talk a little bit about education. Where's all the money going, and will the schools get the big money that they say they deserve? Find out next. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Sean Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning, Phil Hardy with us, and we've covered the Sherry Ybarra Chronicles, thankfully. What about Lawrence Denny? What's up for him?
You know, I think people are again, fearing the worst from Lawrence Denny, and I'm not one of those people.
Fearing the worst? What does that mean, Phil Hardy?
People feel that he's going to politicize the office, and I don't think he's going to do that.
Maybe to make sure that we don't have any voter fraud going on. Is that politicizing the office? To make sure we have some integrity in the votes? Quite frankly, it's welcome that soon-to-be Secretary of State Denny is going to take control of the realms. I think that if you're a cheat, then you need to look out.
I think
you're not a cheat. I'm not a cheat.
No. I think that there's, frankly, very little voter fraud in Idaho, and I think Lawrence Denny has said that himself. I think that Secretary of State Denny is going to do a very good job by making sure that his votes on the land board are in tune with what conservatives want. But on the overall running of the office and overseeing elections and financial disclosure, I think that you're not going to see much of a difference at all. In fact, he could become more conservative and do some things that people don't like in the lobbying or the establishment community. But I think he's going to be a safe pair of hands, and I think that it's fear mongering on the part of the other side to
on
think
the critics.
That, yeah, there's tons of critics, but I don't think that that's going to play. And I could be wrong, but I'd like to think he's going to be just as good a Secretary of State as Ben Ysursa was.
So we've got the fuel tax, Medicaid expansion. Anything else that you can foresee that will be buzzworthy that will get Betsy Russell, now the preeminent political journalist in the state since Mr. Popke's gone away, writing articles that will be picked up in the Statesman?
Well, you know, I think that...
You know Betsy.
Yes, I do. I do know Betsy. I think that... without Dan Popke around, things are going to be a lot different, and I think that politics should become more quiet.
Of happy because now we've inherited the political realm here. Because who else covers politics?
There's very little politics being covered in the newspaper. I must confess. I think that...
Well, it's over for the newspaper. Look, get with the times.
It's just...
AM radio is where it's happening, brother.
It's just Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Thank you.
Yes.
Check's in the mail.
Well, you know, I can do that every once in a while and you know,
well,
give
and
a plug
for you. Your voice sounds very good on the radio.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
We continue on with our friend Phil Hardy. National politics. We take a look at who's the king and queen of social media from last week, and it's Ted Cruz and Hillary Clinton. Who's more or less likely to make it to their party's or primary championship, if you will?
Well, for the Republicans, it's, you know, that is such a wide open field. It's hard to imagine. I can't even name all of the people who are planning on running.
And you're our expert. This segment's going well.
Well, no, I'm, you know, in the sense of Ben Carson, you know, who are these people who are going to gain traction? I'm obviously, like most people, fascinated by Hillary Clinton, you know, who is, for all intents and purposes, is out there campaigning. Meanwhile, going to places like UCLA and accepting a $300,000 speaking fee for a half-hour speech, which will serve to do everything that a campaign stop will do. So instead of a campaign stop costing money to organize, you're getting a public institution paying her $300,000 plus expenses. You know, it's really a quite fascinating phenomenon to see a candidate being paid to campaign. And I don't know how long it's going to go before the rest of the Democrat Party starts to throw rocks at her. I don't see it possible that she's going to just waltz her way to the nomination, but I could be completely wrong.
Phil Hardy with us, Strategies 360. Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO. So you take a look at Hillary Clinton. You pretty much slapped her down. What about the Republicans here? You know, we've got Rand Paul making overtures to the state. Rand Paul, kind of a strange cat, if you will, marches to the beat of his own drummer. Does that have any impact on Idaho?
Well, I think clearly Rand Paul is in the driver's seat for Idaho. He's got the name recognition and support that is grandfathered in, no pun intended, from his father. But there are so many other candidates that are looking to jump into this. You know, Governor Walker, for example, I would not be surprised to see Governor Walker making an appearance in Idaho very soon. I would not be surprised to see Chris Christie start making appearances in Idaho. And for me, the most fascinating part now is since the Idaho Republican Party has moved to the caucus system and moved the caucus up to March, puts Idaho very much in play because we have a lot more delegates than people realize. So it becomes a very tasty morsel. So I think that we're going to see in Idaho sooner than a lot of other states what people's hands are. So I believe that, of course, Rand Paul's already been here. I think we'll see Santorum coming back here. I think we're going to have a literal feast of presidential candidates coming through here. I'm not quite predicting we're turning into New Hampshire here, but I think it's going to be a very exciting time for Republicans because we're going to get to kick the tires on these candidates pretty soon.
What does that mean for any Idaho politician? You have Governor Christie, who you didn't mention, very close with Governor Otter. We remember back in 2012, the governor was rumored to be a pick as far as a cabinet secretary or possibly. You had the New York Times writing that he should run for the presidency. Does anybody benefit on the national stage in this upcoming presidential election?
I think that Governor Otter is well-placed regardless of who the Republican nominee is, if that nominee should win the presidency. I think Hillary Clinton's going to be a formidable candidate. I think we all realize that. But
well, you just said she was done 10 minutes ago.
I didn't say that.
You said that the Democrats were going to turn on her. Where's the consistency here?
I think that some of the Democrats... Listen, just because some Democrats are going to throw rocks at her doesn't mean she's not going to
win. You're talking about $300,000, this, that, and the other. They're going to turn on her, yet she's the formidable opponent.
She's formidable. I think if she wants that nomination, she's going to get that nomination.
Yes, let's stay focused, though. We weren't talking about her.
We're talking about the Republican
nominee. Why did you start talking about her, Phil?
Well, because I'm not sure that any of these Republican candidates is going to be able to beat Hillary Clinton.
Besides Governor Otter, who benefits from these Republican folks coming in, these big names? Anybody on the short list of the ticket besides the governor?
No, I think the governor's probably the only person who's well-placed to gain an ambassadorship or perhaps a Secretary of the Interior if he should want that. But, of course, what happens is if the governor does move up into a new position, it creates that musical chairs that everyone loves so much in Idaho.
Right.
So, you know, obviously Congressman Labrador, there's rumors.
Oh, we're back on him again.
Congressman Labrador has been rumored to be someone that could be the vice presidential running mate for Rand Paul.
What would be the advantage of that? Obviously, Congressman Labrador, as you know more than anybody else, very astute, very hardworking, doesn't get rattled at all with these big-time appearances, is creating a national name for himself. But what would be the advantages of a Rand Paul picking, let's say, Raul Labrador as opposed to somebody from Pennsylvania or Louisiana or Texas?
Well, obviously, because Raul Labrador is a Latino, a Hispanic who speaks Spanish, that is a tremendous advantage that we've been talking about. The Republican Party needs to have a balanced ticket. We used to say a balanced ticket as in terms of geography, but I think the balance now is, do you have a woman on the ticket? Do you have a Latino? Do you have an African-American? Those are the things that will balance a ticket now. And I don't think that, look, for example, you know, the idea of balancing your ticket with a geographic state of importance, you know, went out the window. Joe Biden is from Delaware. You know, there's absolutely no political significance there at all. So I think that Congressman Labrador ticks a lot of those boxes. And frankly, I don't see Senator Rubio wanting to be vice president for anybody.
I see. More coming up with Phil Hardy. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580KIDO. Remember, Kevin Miller Show on Facebook.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580KIDO. Thank you all for joining us. As, Phil Hardy is just continuing to keep us entertained.
It's Christmas.
It is Christmas time, of course, that coming up. Well, what's the future for one of your great friends, Senator Fulcher?
You know, Senator Fulcher, I think, still has a bright future, particularly because he's...
You know, everybody for you has a bright future. Who has a dim future besides your host here?
I think that there are... We don't need to talk about the people who have dimmer political futures. we can just avail ourselves of the rising stars. What Senator Fulcher has going for him...
Did he make a mistake by being out in the woods and endorsing the platform and not endorsing the governor? Did he miss an opportunity by sticking to his principles by saying, you know something, I'm just going to sit this one out, and kind of like that army in the woods, letting everybody else fight it out instead of jumping in there and supporting the big O?
At the end of the day, Butch won by such a huge margin. People are going to forget about those things in 4 years. I suspect that if Senator Fulcher wants to run again, he will be well-placed because he has spent some of that time. Again, as I said, it's the experience factor, getting into those rural places. I'm sure he'll be doing a lot more of that. And he has the benefit of being a young guy. I think he's just 50 years old. He'll be 54 in 4 years. There's nothing but upside for him if he wants to continue to participate in Idaho politics. And I think that he still does have a message that resonates with folks. So I would not be surprised if he continues to stay involved. I'm personally a big fan. So I think that if he chooses to run again, I think that he's going to start with quite a head start on most other candidates. Perhaps not as great a head start as Brad Little, but I can't think of any other individuals who will have such a head start on winning that nomination.
All right, 2 minutes left. Phil Hardy with us. What about the battle over education? Has that been won since the governor won?
I think the battle of education isn't over because there is still more investment that needs to go in. Personally, I am disturbed in Idaho, and I know a lot of people are. They say the go-on rate isn't good. Everyone graduates high school but doesn't go to college. Well, I think the fact of the matter is that college is too expensive for most people in Idaho. So until university prices become stable or a bigger scholarship system is put in place, the battle of education is never going to end. that is really what is people need to start talking about, and I believe people will start talking about it in this legislative session.
Well, they always do because they don't want to spend the money. Now, let me hit you with this. Are we going to have a short or long legislative session?
Very short. I'd say 68 to 70 days.
And then what? People just go back to their lives?
People go back to their lives, go back to their jobs. The governor goes back to governing. And
so we're going to raise taxes, expand Medicaid, Medicare, continue on with the health exchange, and everybody's going to take it lying down?
I think that those are probably reasonable goals that the state needs to implement. Now, look, I mean, I know we don't have much time here, but more than 70,000 Idahoans signed up to the health exchange. It's one of the largest numbers in any state. That showed that people had the need for this.
Didn't they predict 1.2 million people, or I'm sorry, over 100,000, or
no.
Supposed to be 300,000?
No, I think that they predicted 50,000 or 55,000.
50,000 in the first 6 months, which didn't happen.
I think that the bottom line is that in order to have good governance, these are issues that we have to address and probably will be addressed.
We're going to address more with you. Phil Hardy, we appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure, Kevin.
You can always get a hold of Phil at Strategies 360. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. And Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO. I want to thank you for listening to this program. And a lot of people take it for granted with their FM signals or their big sticks. We don't take anything for granted, and we know each and every day that you have a choice. You can be with the ha-has, you can be with the music folks, you can be with anyone else, and you choose to be with us. And we work very hard to make sure that you're entertained, provoked, you're engaged. We don't bribe people. We do it in the arena of ideas. We need to grow this program so we can have this outlet for you. That's what we're here for you. May your family have a great day. God bless. No matter what, no matter when, keep the faith.
Serving Meridian.